Wednesday, January 26, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. Hope it is off to a good start. Hope you and your family and your friends are all staying healthy. Hope you're staying strong mentally as things have kind of gotten weird, but hopefully they're starting to trend back to good again. Hope you're having a good start to the week. You know, the last 2 years have been rough, and we've had a lot of craziness. We've had a lot of weirdness that have actually made it feel like these years have just been dragging along, going really, really slow, right? I mean, you think back to when the whole pandemic thing started and all the political stuff started, and it seems like these last 2 years have just been dragging and dragging. And you're like, man, it just seems like we're stuck in this weird rut, right? So how is it even possible that today, January 26th, is already the 2 year anniversary of the death of NBA superstar Kobe Bryant back in 2020? That doesn't even seem possible. I literally remember where I was when I heard that news, and it does not seem like that was already 2 years ago. And here's what's weird. At the exact same time, it also feels like that was another lifetime ago. Of course, Kobe Bryant passed away along with his daughter Gianna and seven others in a helicopter crash due to some heavy fog back in Calabasas, California. And you know, it's kind of funny. And I don't mean that situation is funny. I just mean this next situation is funny. That was not so much funny. This is kind of funny. Americans have short memories. Maybe it's just all over the world. I don't know. But I know here in the United States of America, we have really, really short memories. I mean, I want you to think back. Remember the Alamo? Yeah, we forgot that. Remember Pearl Harbor? We forgot that. Remember 9-1-1? We forgot that. We forgot about all those things in like, what, 6 months? We had already forgotten about those things. But we're even worse in sports. We forget the previous era in sports so fast. I don't know why that is, but it is. You know, recently, just in the last few weeks, I heard former Miami Heat star Dwayne Wade say he believes that people will soon be forgetting about Michael Jordan just like they forgot about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? I mean, that sounds insane. Air Jordan, Michael Jordan, in my opinion, the greatest basketball player to ever play. But that's me. I understand some people disagree with that. But Michael Jordan, the guy who made Nike, the guy who made the Jordan brand, he is worldwide. I mean, Jordan actually did a Space Jam movie that was good. You know what I'm saying? Michael Jordan is known worldwide. It's not just an American thing. Everyone knows Michael Jordan. But when you think about those comments by Dwayne Wade, he's not wrong. I mean, look how fast we have elevated LeBron James by many people who have already passed Jordan. Pass Michael Jordan? There's no way. He hasn't passed Magic. He hasn't passed Kareem. He hasn't passed Bird. He hasn't passed Kobe Bryant yet in my book. But again, when we have those super short memories in sports, we forget about all those guys, don't we? We forget how much of a killer Kobe Bryant was. Kobe Bryant completely, entirely modeled his game after Michael Jordan. To the point, I'll be honest, to the point it's a little bit creepy. You can tell he even tried to copy his mannerisms. Some of the movements, some of the way he talked, some of the way he walked, some of the way he moved, he copied everything Michael did. But we're already starting to forget about Kobe Bryant. We're already starting to forget about how clutch he was with the game on the line. Give me the ball. I will score. That was just 2 years ago that we lost Kobe Bryant. We're already forgetting about that. We forget things so quickly. In sports, it's kind of sad to remember that it was just 2 years ago we lost Kobe Bryant. It's also kind of a sad coincidence that on January 26th, Vanessa Bryant lost Kobe because today is also National Spouses Day. Now, National Spouses Day each year celebrates the bond between two people and sets aside time for couples to show each other their gratitude for the lives that they lead together. Dedicated to recognizing spouses everywhere, the observance reminds us to take the time for our mate, from being thankful for the fulfillment and security of a long-term relationship, to the boost of morale and well-being provided by our spouses. Hey, there's a lot of different reasons to celebrate National Spouses Day. This is a day to show your spouse that you care, you appreciate all the things that he or she does for you, that he or she does for your family, for your household. So make sure today you are taking care of your spouse if you have one. Get them that big diamond ring. And hopefully, you're not getting it for them for the same reason that Kobe had to buy that one for Vanessa back in 2003. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe, I don't know, confess your extramarital affair. We would probably not want to hear about it. But, I mean, we also kind of would want to hear about it. But if you've got a question for us, maybe you've got a comment for us, hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at dailydosports. We would love to hear what is on your mind. Feel free to reach out. We do get a lot of questions, a lot of comments to us. I'll always take the time to answer. I just might end up using what you send in on the show. Also, make sure you're stopping by dailydosports.com and checking out some of the new stuff going on over there. We've got links to the podcast. We've got links to the videos. We've got new articles going up every single week. We've got articles going up on Tuesday that I am writing, touching on a number of different subjects. And trust me, they're a very quick read. It's not going to be a real long, drawn-out article that you're having to read for 20 minutes. You can read it while you're kind of at work, just keeping an eye on it. Plus, we've got our featured columnist, Young Jimmy, posting a new article on Thursdays. Hey, Young Jimmy is starting to reach out into the NFL world. He's talked some college football. He is stepping up and attacking some of these subjects. We know Young Jimmy's a baseball guy. He's going after some other subjects. Got to make sure you stop by dailydosports.com and check out the new work going on over there. Plus, we all know we're still doing that online shopping. It's just easier than going out to these stores. Be sure you stop by tpublic.com and pick up that Daily Dose gear that you know you need in your life. Got a number of designs over there. Got our standard Daily Dose gear. We've got football and basketball gear over there, but you can get a hoodie, you can get a sweatshirt, you can get a t-shirt, you can get it in whatever color you want. Just go by tpublic.com, search Daily Dose. They're always doing a number of sales. They will get you your stuff as quickly as possible. Be sure you stop by and get that Daily Dose gear. Hey, today on the show, we have a few sports news stories that we need to cover. We need to take a look at those NFL playoffs that took place over the weekend. And we're going to have a Daily Dose top five for you today. But before we get to any of that, I'm telling you right now, if you are a Colorado sports fan, I have some great news for you. We actually need to get to that right now. Joining us right now on the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, we have someone that joined us on the Dose a couple of months ago. But now we have some updated news, and that is a very good thing. Dana McLeod is the CFO and head of content at Vaca TV. Dana, welcome back to the Daily Dose. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure. And I'm so excited to be here with our big update.
You know, here in the Rocky Mountain region, a lot of people don't know this, but sports fans are basically being held hostage by our local cable companies and with the Altitude Sports Network. Locally, if you have the wrong cable company, you are missing a ton of Denver Nuggets, Colorado Avalanche, Colorado Rockies games, not to mention a lot of like local sports programming that I know people would love to be getting. Now, they keep telling us this is all going to be solved. This is all going to be over soon. But I've been hearing that for a while now. I've kind of stopped holding my breath. Dana, when you joined us back in November, you told us how you had this new service that Avoca TV was providing. You had a service that could get Rocky Mountain sports fans their games back, their programming back that they want. But at that time, I believe you were in Boise, Phoenix, and Colorado Springs. Well, last Friday, you came out with a big announcement that I think Denver Metro fans are really going to want to hear. What is that news that you have for us?
That is true. Ivaca launched in Denver last Friday, so we are available for everybody in the Denver area. That includes really most of the Front Range. So Castle Rock, Fort Collins, Denver, all the way down through Colorado Springs and Pueblo. Sign up with us. Don't wait for that altitude thing to get solved or not get solved. It's been 3 years.
Yes.
Maybe they'll figure it out. But as a fan, you don't need to wait anymore. You can sign up with Ivaca, $25 a month. We give you all your local sports. So you'll get your Avs, your Nuggets, your Rapids. When baseball season comes, you're going to get your Rockies. We also have a deal with Colorado State University. And we're working on a bunch of other universities to give you more local sports content. So we are the best way to get your local sports teams by far, now available in Denver.
That is great news for sports fans. Dana, I hate to make you repeat yourself, but can you kind of explain what Ivaca TV is and kind of how it works?
Yeah, of course. We are a hybrid TV distributor. So we use over-the-air broadcasts and streaming. So we kind of do both. So some content comes to you via streaming and some comes over the air. Your guide will, when you sign up for Ivaca, you'll get an antenna. You can use your own antenna or you can purchase one from us.
Okay.
The antenna will pick up all of the local channels in the area. So you'll get all of the big four, Fox, NBC, CBS, ABC. And every sports fan in Colorado knows that that's how you watch the Broncos. So
sure.
I know the season's over. The Broncos content next fall. And then the guide will be integrated. So you'll see all those local over-the-air channels. You'll also see all the channels we provide, which is really centered around those regional sports networks. But we also have a lot of national channels like Hallmark, Game Show Network, Family Entertainment TV, NFL Network, Red Zone. You get a skinny bundle of channels along with those regional sports channels. So you can actually have your entertainment networks in addition to the sports channels. And it's pretty seamless. You know, you put the antenna up in your house. The Denver area has wonderful over-the-air coverage. A lot of people surprisingly don't know that.
Right.
So you put the antenna up, you'll get 40 to 50 channels just over the air. And then you'll get our subscription, our skinny bundle of channels in addition. And it's all there in one user interface.
Now, you said the current cost right now is $25. What is the setup fees or is there anything else involved there or is it $25 and you just get rolling?
Great question. It's $25. There's no sign up fee. We do have a box, set top box that goes in your house.
Okay.
And connects to the TV. You can either pay for that up front and own it completely, and that's $250, or you can rent it from us for $5 a month. So if you rent it, it's $30 total. That's a two-year price guarantee. So that's another great thing we're doing right now with this rollout is we will not raise your price for 2 years. That is a rare situation for pay TV providers.
Oh,
and there's no contract for you either.
Okay.
So there's no obligation that you sign up for.
So if say you have one of the cable providers, say you have, I don't know, Comcast or you have whoever, and you want to get Ivaca TV, you're a little bit nervous about maybe making that full transition. Can you kind of run both and see how it works for you? And if you like it, and then, I mean, I know for me, I'm going to end up dropping Comcast if that's the case, because I'm kind of sick of that whole thing. But is that a possibility to do?
Absolutely. Yeah. Since we have no contracts, there's no reason you need to cancel Comcast. If you want this to be supplemental to Comcast, since they don't carry the Avs and the Nuggets or even Dish TV, or a different streaming service that you might have. I mean, none of those streaming services outside of DirecTV Stream carry these local sports networks. So even if you had Hulu with live TV, you're not going to get access to Avs and Nuggets. So you could have Hulu plus Ivaca, definitely.
Okay. And that's really, really good information, because I know there'll be a lot of people that would be very interested in that. It seems to me that Ivaca is going into these markets and you are trying to pull and hold those local sports fans that just can't get their content. And even in states or cities that they might have a carrier that will help them a little bit. We know that some of these big carriers are kind of getting out of that business, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like I said, Hulu, YouTube TV, neither of them carry the regional sports networks. They're more on the virtual side, digital side. But Dish has dropped almost all of the regional sports networks. I don't think they carry anymore. So there's a shift towards some of these big media companies focusing on just one national lineup. That's great. And it works for a lot of people. We really want to find our sweet spot and cater to those people that want the local content. So absolutely. Local sports, local news. We're trying to do a ton of new interesting things. We've recently put up some webcams around Colorado so you can see what's the traffic like on the way to the mountains or wow. what's the snow look like at the ski area.
Sure.
So we're really trying to look for unique stuff that's highly tied into the community.
Dana, the Denver Nuggets are currently in sixth place in the Western Conference. They are hoping to get healthy. They're hoping to get some people back that could improve. Altitude carries 76 of their 82 regular season games. The Colorado Avalanche are in first place in their Central Division. Altitude carries 69 of their 82 regular season games. Hey, these are two teams that are going to be in the playoffs, and these cable companies are not going to let us watch the majority of these games down the stretch and possibly even into the playoffs, but we can watch them with Evoca TV. What is the best way for someone to go sign up and get this service rolling? Because I know, speaking personally, I want this as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Go to evoca.tv. You'll have an opportunity to put in your the address that you're going to be watching it from, and it'll just confirm that you're in our coverage area. So, you know, if somebody's listening in Nebraska, I'm sorry, we're not yet in Nebraska.
Sure.
We do have plans for total national domination, but it's one day at a time.
Of course.
So you put in your address, it'll tell you, yes, you're in our service checker. You go through the checkout. We'll get that box out to you as fast as possible. Quite a few people that signed up on Friday have already had those boxes shipped. You get it. It's a self-install. Pretty simple. Even my parents were able to do it, which
there
means
you
it's
go.
Not too hard. And then once you get it set up, you're ready to go. You got access to all your local teams.
Well, this is excellent news. And I'm telling you right now, I am literally going to go sign up for this right now because I want my local teams back. I don't get most of these games. And it is so frustrating to be knowing there's a huge game tonight. There's a big rivalry game. I can't even watch it. And sometimes you even see it. Hey, it shows it's going to be on tonight. No, it's blacked out. You're not going to get it. You're going to lose that game. I'm going to be going and signing up for this. And I have to think there are going to be a lot of other people that are going to be doing the same. I absolutely love that you are doing this, that you're getting involved at the local level and giving sports fans what they want to see. So this is very, very helpful information. Now, some of you might not know this, but Dana McLeod played a little basketball. She played high school hoops down at, I believe, Coronado High School.
That's right.
Yep. Played college basketball at Colorado College. When is the last time you picked up a basketball?
Kind of embarrassing to admit. It's been
a
while.
That's all right.
The last time I picked up a basketball was within the last few years. I went to Dave and Buster's and I crushed it on that.
There
free
you
throw
go.
Shooting game they have. That's always a little fun. You go with like your coworkers and they have no idea what your background is. And then you just show them.
You just go and light them up.
It has been a long time since I've actually played like a full court basketball.
Sure. Sure. Here's the question. Here's the ultimate question. I take you outside right now. Mm-hmm. We go to the regulation hoop. I give you 10 free throws. How many are you knocking down?
Oh, man. It would have been 90% easy.
See,
it would have been
9 out of 10 goal,
easy.
Right?
Before. We actually did a fundraiser one year.
Yeah.
I think the Jimmy V Foundation.
Oh, yeah.
Cancer fundraising.
Sure.
And I had all my parents and my whole family. They all just agreed to give me $1 for every free throw I made out of 100. And I made like 94. So
wow.
They were like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. Today,
you made some money that day.
Yeah. Today, I don't know. Hopefully I can make 7 out of 10.
You
I think
can
that's
kind
of like riding a
eight.
Bike.
You, it's rhythm, it's muscle memory. You'd be able to do, you'd be able to do just fine. Well, I'm warning y'all right now, do not get into a free throw contest with her because she's going to tear you up. Like she said, that is kind of like riding a bike. It comes back very, very quickly. Dana, I want to thank you so much for stopping by. This genuinely is really, really good news. And right now in this era, like we need all the good news we can get. But to get your favorite teams back to going into spring, when this is going to heat up and we're going to want these games, and then going into summer where we get, you know, Colorado Rockies games and that kind of thing, when there's nothing else on, this is perfect timing to get your sports back. Be sure that you go over to Evoca TV. I want to thank you so much for stopping by, giving us that information. We appreciate it so much. And anytime you have, anything else you need to share, you let us know. We would be happy to have you. And thank you so much for stopping
thank
by today.
Thank you. Really appreciate the time and thanks for the support. We're excited and I hope all your fans sign up. It'll be great.
I do too. Thank you so much. I know for sure a few people that are going to be signing up, so I appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thanks, Clint.
Okay, coming back. We do have some sports news stories coming out this week that I want to make sure that we discuss, but then I want to get over to those NFL playoffs. Hey, the championship games are now set. We had a wild, wild weekend in the NFL. We are now down to the final four of who could be our Super Bowl champions in a crazy, unpredictable season. But here's a question that I have for you. What could trip up each one of these four teams? We are going to be looking at some NFL kryptonite when we get back. So let's jump into a little bit of sports news that we do have this week. A couple of stories that I want to touch on. And I know that we're going to be talking a lot about the NFL today. So let's just start there. It seems that New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton has informed the team that he will not necessarily be retiring, but at least taking a break. Payton informed the team that he is going to be stepping down after 15 seasons. Now, Sean Payton is 58 years old. He leaves the Saints with an overall regular season record of 152-89. He had a postseason mark of 9-8. And remember, he did have that one Super Bowl victory as well as the 2006 AP Coach of the Year Award. That is pretty amazing for that franchise. Because if you're not old enough to know, the Saints of the 70s and the 80s, they weren't just bad. They were the worst franchise in the entire NFL every single year. You know how every year we look at like the Detroit Lions and we say, I wonder if they'll win a game this year. That was the Saints back in the 70s and 80s. They were horrible every single year. So what Sean Payton has done down there is nothing less of really, really impressive. Now, they are saying that Saints defensive coordinator Dennis Allen is considered the leading candidate to replace Sean Payton. They also say they will interview Detroit Lions defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn. But Payton had 3 years remaining on his contract. He said he was not committed to returning to coach the Saints after what was an incredibly difficult and challenging season. Hey, this is what coaching Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill and Trevor Siemian, this is what that will do to a guy. And the rumor is that maybe Sean Payton is going to take a year off and then he might become the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Think about that job. Crazy high expectations, delusional owner, overreaching owner, delusional fans. I think I'd rather be in New Orleans myself, but I guess we will see if Sean Payton would like to be a glutton for that type of punishment. Moving over to Major League Baseball, former Boston Red Sox slugger David Ortiz was the only player that will be gaining induction to the Baseball Hall of Fame this year. That vote came out yesterday. Players like Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, and Roger Clemens were shut out once again. Big Papi was the only player to clear the 75% threshold for induction, according to the results of this year's voting by the Baseball Writers Association of America. Ortiz will become the second Hall of Famer from those 2004 Red Sox who famously broke Boston's 86-year championship drought by winning that year's World Series. He will be joining pitcher Pedro Martinez. And I know there's going to be a lot of clamoring by the media that guys, especially like Bonds and Clemens, should be making the Hall of Fame. And I've told you before, I have no problem with giving the PED users like a smoke-filled room in the basement. You have some beads over the door. You've got some incense burning inside. I don't have a problem with that. One thing I do have a problem with, though, is when we hear these writers and these media people saying, well, you know, these guys were Hall of Famers before the PEDs. I mean, yeah, but that's kind of like saying OJ was husband of the year before he killed his wife. Because the husband of the year probably doesn't pop open his wife's noggin like a Pez dispenser.
You are disgusting.
The Hall of Fame type players probably don't use the PEDs. Not the best argument you could use here. And I know that I keep talking on the dose about how the wide open college athletics transfer rule might actually be a bad thing. And that it could eventually bring some bad issues with it. Well, we have one story this week that could be giving us a hint of some of the things that are coming for us. If you have ever watched the Netflix series QB1, you might remember the Las Vegas-based Bishop Gorman quarterback, Tate Martell. He was actually being heralded as the next maybe Tim Tebow. This was a big, strong, running back type of kid. He could throw the ball a little bit. He was gritty. He was gutty. He found ways to win games at the high school level. Well, since he got out of high school, things haven't gone so well for Tate Martell. But it's not that big of a story because everyone's like, well, I mean, who is Tate Martell now? But I want you to think about this. Tate Martell originally committed to the University of Washington back when he was just 14 years old. Now, why anyone would even think that was a real commitment, I don't know. Why anyone would even ask for a commitment at that age, I again do not know. But needless to say, Tate didn't abide by that. In 2015, he changed that commitment to Texas A&M. Then in 2016, he decommitted from A&M. And then he committed to Ohio State University. So finally, after three tries, Tate Martell actually picked a university where he was going to attend. So off to Columbus he went. But of course, you might remember, he couldn't beat out Dwayne Haskins. Well, Haskins left, went to the NFL draft. So then it's going to be Martell's job, right? Well, no, because Ohio State got another transfer. A kid transferred in from the University of Georgia by the name of Justin Fields. Well, I mean, Tate Martell can't beat out Justin Fields, right? He doesn't have a good chance there. So instead, he decided to transfer to Miami. But when he got to Miami, he couldn't beat out Jaren Williams. That's not a good sign. So then Tate Martell decided, well, I'll switch to wide receiver. But then he couldn't really do that. And so he switched back to quarterback. Then he ended up getting suspended and getting in some trouble, violation of team rules. But then he thought, okay, now's my chance. I'm going to end up being the starter at the University of Miami. But then De'Aaron King transferred in. I mean, Tate Martell can't beat him out, right? So he transferred yet again last year. This time, he went back home to Nevada, and he was going to play for UNLV. But he couldn't crack their lineup either. And after appearing in just two games this past season, Tate Martell has now announced he's retiring from football. Now, you might look at this story, and you might think to yourself, well, what does this have to do with the transfer portal? This is clearly a story of a delusional kid who has delusional parents who have a very inflated view of their kid as a football player. And you'd be totally right to think that. But this is also the story of a kid that is learning the lesson that instead of sticking and learning and fighting and improving to get where you want to be in life, you just quit and you go somewhere else. Hey, let's be real and let's be honest. This kid should probably have gone to like Youngstown State instead of Ohio State, right? I think we can all agree with that. He's clearly not as much of a talent as he and his parents thought he was. But wherever he went, he needs to learn. You have to get tough. You have to persevere. And this current system of open transfer, do whatever you want, go wherever you want, and transfer as many times as you want, it has failed him. It hasn't helped him. He's learned a lesson. The lesson is when the going gets tough, quit and go somewhere else. So this system hasn't helped Tate Martell. And to be fair, his delusional parents haven't really helped either. But again, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Remember, this is all just starting. This open transfer stuff is just beginning. It's going to get worse. Trust me on that. We will have bigger problems coming. One story in the NBA that I do want to touch on this week, and that was the unfortunate event that took place on Friday night this last week in a game between the Chicago Bulls and the Milwaukee Bucks. Bulls guard Alex Caruso drove in for a layup on a fast break in the third quarter. But Milwaukee Bucks player Grayson Allen hooked Caruso's right arm. He spun Caruso in the air and sent him hard to the floor. He landed on his right wrist. Now, Grayson Allen was assessed a flagrant 2 foul. He was ejected from the game for that senseless foul that he really shouldn't have committed. It was a very dangerous play. And Caruso said initially his wrist was a little banged up, but the initial x-rays came back negative. He actually tried to continue to play. However, further x-rays were taken after the game, and they found a break in Alex Caruso's wrist. He is now going to be missing 6 to 8 weeks for surgery on that wrist. Well, I mean, who is to blame for this? Obviously, Grayson Allen needs to be suspended. And the league did suspend him. They gave him, when Caruso is going to be missing 6 to 8 weeks, they gave Grayson Allen a 1-game suspension. Well, that'll really fix things, won't it? Hey, the Milwaukee Bucks obviously need to do a better job of controlling their player, right? But you know what? I'm going to go back a little bit further in the Grayson Allen timeline. And I actually look at someone else that I think deserves a little bit of blame for this. No, it's not the Bucks or their head coach. It's not even Adam Silver and his big alien-like head. No, I'm talking about Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski, who you can make a pretty strong case is the greatest college basketball coach in the history of ever. And yet, remember back at Duke, when Grayson Allen was racking up all those tripping calls and cheap shot calls, and then Coach K was really going to lay the hammer to Grayson Allen. So he suspended him indefinitely. Do you remember that? He had gotten in trouble. We had all seen it on video. He kept tripping kids. It was kind of dangerous. So Mike Krzyzewski suspended Grayson Allen indefinitely. And then that suspension turned out to be a whopping 1 game also. Yeah, this idiot Grayson Allen didn't learn then, and he won't learn now. Here's when he's going to learn. And I'm sorry it has to be this way. I'm sorry that I have to talk mean here, but he'll learn when someone punches him in the throat for this nonsense. Because it might be time for NBA players to police Grayson Allen, because the league won't do it. The Players Association won't do it. His college coach wouldn't do it. Hey, at some point, somebody's going to have to reach out and correct his behavior, because the adults in his world have not done it. He's clearly not capable of doing it himself. I mean, a 1-game suspension? Yeah, that'll teach him. It'll teach him to do it again, as usual. Okay, let's move over to those NFL playoffs. We are now down to the final four of the NFL. We have 2 teams remaining from each conference, the AFC and the NFC. And now we head into championship week to see who is going to be going basically to Los Angeles for Super Bowl 56. And we had wild games over the weekend. We predicted that they would be completely unpredictable, and we were right there. But here's what I'm wondering about. Of the 4 teams that are remaining, we know they obviously have some strengths. They obviously have some things they do really, really well. But when we are watching the games this coming weekend, I want you to think about one thing. What are these teams' biggest weaknesses? What should we be looking for to see if they can hide or at least minimize so it won't hurt them so much? You know, back in the day when I was coaching, I did a lot of scouting. I enjoyed scouting. I enjoyed coming up with a strategy. How are we going to beat this team? What about our team is going to make us somehow beat that team? I know sometimes as fans, we think, well, my team's going to win because I like them. And so I want them to win, and therefore they're going to win. That's not actually how it works. You've got to come up with a plan. What are we going to do that shows our strengths, accentuates our strengths, and hides our weaknesses? In fact, right there on my scouting report that I used to take with me to games, which, by the way, was like 10 pages that I would fill out, it would say, what does this team like to do? What do they not like to do? What are they good at? What are they bad at? Because if you can force a team to do something they are bad at, sometimes the battle can actually be won pretty easily. So maybe you're going to be watching these NFL games purely as a fan. Maybe you're watching them even as a bettor, whatever. What should you be looking for from these final four teams that is their biggest weakness? And as you're watching the games, do they get into situations where they have to do these things, or can they avoid them? Let's take a look at what could be the kryptonite for our final four teams. First up, we get those surprising Cincinnati Bengals who went into the number one seed Tennessee Titans on Saturday. And hey, they started off strong. Young quarterback Joe Burrow, he was getting things going. The Bengals took the lead. But then we saw right before the end of the first half, Tennessee and running back Derrick Henry, they stormed back. They got right back in the game. And it was like, well, I mean, Cincinnati was cute, but they can't hang with the big boys. Once Tennessee gets going in the second half, this is going to be over. That wasn't the case. Joe Burrow kept making plays. That Cincinnati defense stood strong. They shut down Derrick Henry when they had to. In fact, Cincinnati held Derrick Henry to just 62 yards on Saturday. That took him 20 carries to get that. They also pressured Tennessee quarterback Ryan Tannehill into three interceptions. And while I understand two of those interceptions were deflected passes, it's because you're throwing him into places you shouldn't. Now, we know quarterback Joe Burrow, he seems to be calm beyond his years. And by the way, I'm not calling him Joe Cool. Joe Montana is Joe Cool. That shall not change, at least here on the Dose. But this kid doesn't get rattled. That Cincinnati defense, it's proving to be tougher than anyone expected. But what could trip up the Cincinnati Bengals? Well, we saw it on Saturday, and it is the giant, obvious elephant in the room. The Cincinnati Bengals really, really struggle to protect Joe Burrow. And we've been saying it here on the Dose all year. They're trying to get that kid killed. But they specifically struggle with the right side of their offensive line. Right tackle Riley Reiff is out for the year. So the Bengals have a player in there named Isaiah Prince. And Prince has not been very good. In fact, Isaiah Prince ranks 72nd out of 85 offensive tackles. That is according to Pro Football Focus. But it's not just the tackle position. Joe Burrow also isn't getting much help at the right guard position. They have rookie Jackson Carman at right guard. He's ranked 60th out of 82 offensive guards. On Saturday against Tennessee, Joe Burrow was sacked 9 times. He was hit 15 times. Hey, I get it. That kid doesn't get rattled. He is a stud. I really like Joe Burrow. That is way too much. And that is really, really dangerous. It is all fun and games until he can't play. Now, this week, can Cincinnati hide that right side of the line? It's going to be tough because they'll be facing the Kansas City Chiefs and defensive end Chris Jones, who does line up on the left side of his line, which will be facing the right side of the Bengals' offensive line. Chris Jones could have a field day on Sunday. The Bengals have to do their best to chip with running backs, to chip with tight ends, to hide that side of their offensive line if they're going to have any success on Sunday, or they could be in for a long day. We move next to the surprising San Francisco 49ers, who have now pulled off probably the two biggest upsets of the postseason. In wildcard weekend, they went into Dallas, they beat the Cowboys, and then this past Saturday, they played on the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field, and somehow they stole a win in the snow against the number one seeded Green Bay Packers. The Niners are winning games with their defense and with their running game. On Saturday night, the San Francisco defense held Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers to just 263 total yards. They forced a turnover. San Fran ran the ball reasonably well in the snow. In the bad conditions, they had 29 carries for 106 yards. It's not great, but it keeps the opposing offenses off the field. It eats clock. Hey, if San Francisco can run the ball and they play good defense again this week, they're going to be a pain. They're going to be a problem. So what is the weakness that the Niners have to hide this week? Now, I'll be honest with you. It is really tempting to put their special teams unit here because their special teams haven't been good all year. But, you know, this past weekend, their special teams actually won the game for them. As bad as they are, they were light years ahead of what the Green Bay Packers special teams unit looked like. So I'm not going to put them there. Now, the kryptonite, if you will, for the San Francisco 49ers is quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo throwing the ball when he is under pressure. Now, to be fair, most quarterbacks struggle if you put them under significant pressure. I understand that's pretty common sense. Pick a guy. I mean, most of them struggle if they're getting pressure in their face, if they are getting pressure at their feet, if they are getting pressure around their knees, they're getting hit, they're getting sacked. Such is the life of any quarterback, right? But I want you to look at these numbers. On the season, Jimmy Garoppolo has thrown 20 touchdowns to 12 interceptions. Those obviously aren't great numbers. But the Niners are a running team. They're a defensive team. So, okay. And Jimmy G has missed some time with injuries, so he's not putting up huge passing touchdowns. No big deal. But get this. And again, this is according to Pro Football Focus. When he is pressured, Jimmy Garoppolo makes good throws to the correct player and gives them an accurate pass just 29% of the time. Hey, that's not good. And it can result in turnovers for his team. When the San Francisco 49ers are in obvious passing situations, and we know the pass rush Jimmy G is going to face this week with the Los Angeles Rams, oh, it's going to be very, very different than what he faced against the Packers. This could be a very precarious situation. The Niners have to run the ball. They can't put Jimmy G in second and long, third and long, where the Rams can just pin back their ears and go after him, because we know the kryptonite for that team could be when we know he's going to pass and we can come after him. When he's under pressure, he doesn't always do the right thing. Speaking of those Los Angeles Rams, the Los Angeles Rams took a 27-3 lead in the second half on Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, only to poop their pants again and again in the second half. They tried to give the game back to Tampa. The Rams turned the ball over four times. They went just 4 of 11 on third downs. They went just 2 of 5 in the red zone, all of which contributed to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers actually tying the game at 27 with less than a minute to play. But then, somehow, and I'll be honest, I don't know how, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers forgot to cover the best wide receiver in football, and with 27 seconds left, Matt Stafford hit Cooper Kupp. He gets behind the Tampa Bay defense for 44 yards. The Rams kick a field goal, win the game, and beat Tom Brady and move forward. And while I have to wonder what the Bucs were doing, I don't know what they were doing letting Cooper Kupp get behind you. He's only the most dangerous wide receiver in the league right now. The Rams, after the fight was nearly stopped in the first half, then they nearly got themselves knocked out, but then they got back up and they knocked Tom Brady out themselves. What is the weakness for this Los Angeles Rams team? There's a few different ways we could go here. And I kind of struggle with their running game. At times it looks good. At times it looks very, very average. But you know, the biggest thing, there are times I struggle with Matt Stafford. In the first half of the season, he looked great. As the games have gotten tighter, as the season has worn on, Matt Stafford has started to make, less good decisions. But right now, I think one of the biggest things facing the Los Angeles Rams, they got to get rid of those turnovers. I mean, on the season, Rams runners have fumbled the ball just 5 times. That's not terrible. But Matt Stafford has thrown 18 interceptions. That's not good. And 4 of those were pick sixes. That's also not good. It's much easier to score against the Rams if you don't actually have to face their defense. If you can score on their offense, that's a lot easier than dealing with Aaron Donald and Von Miller in that group. Again, on Sunday against Tampa, the Rams were rolling, but then they turned it over 4 times. Well, that lets teams back into it. The Rams can't do that this week against the 49ers. If they do, the Niners will grind them and play keep away from their offense. You have to take care of the football this week. The Los Angeles Rams have had problems with turnovers. Matt Stafford specifically, he has to curb those going into championship week this next week. Finally, we reached the Kansas City Chiefs, who played, honestly, in the most entertaining game of the weekend. And just briefly, how good was the NFL this week? every single game came down to the final possession. Three of them came down to field goals. One of them went to overtime. It was an amazing weekend for the NFL. They absolutely crushed it this weekend in the divisional series. As bad as wild card weekend was, we didn't have all that many close games. Hey, this weekend more than made up for it. But the final game on Sunday, the Kansas City Chiefs outlast the Buffalo Bills 42-36 in a wild overtime game that saw three lead changes in like the last minute of the game. Brief side note, again, how much of a letdown is it every year when the NFL just refuses to retool their overtime rules? I just wanted to watch Bills quarterback Josh Allen get on the field one more time. He had to sit on the bench in overtime, never even got a chance to get up to bat. Just go to the college format already. I know the NFL doesn't like to be like, well, we just copied college. I get it. But their product is better than yours. Their overtime is better than yours. Theirs is good. Yours is not. Fix it. But I digress. The Kansas City Chiefs, hey, they're a high-powered team. They have so much talent. Just like we saw on Sunday, when the Chiefs are hot, they can just absolutely torch you. Sometimes, in just 13 seconds, they can torch you. But here's the question. What could trip up the Kansas City Chiefs? It is tempting to look at their defense, which does allow 21 points per game. That's not horrible, but that could be a problem. It is tempting to look at their running game sometimes. Sometimes they don't always run the ball as effectively as they could or should. But it seems like when they have to figure those things out, those things all kind of come together. The kryptonite for the Chiefs, in my opinion, is when they just start forcing things offensively. When they're not patient. When they don't just take what the defense is giving them. Hey, we know Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, if you blitz him, he will shred you. Patrick Mahomes averages 9.3 yards per attempt when you blitz him. That's insane. But when defenses sit back in coverage and they make him pick them apart, they make him be patient. They force him to check down and take what they're giving him. His yards per attempt drops down to just 7. His quarterback rating actually drops when you don't blitz him. Over the past 4 seasons, Patrick Mahomes has struggled more when they sit back and make him take those underneath throws because he wants to go score. He wants to throw it down the field. He wants to make the big play. He wants to attack you. Now, on Sunday, can the Cincinnati Bengals force Patrick Mahomes to be patient? I have my doubts. But if they could sit back and they could make him check down and they could make him grind things out, maybe they could find a way to have a little more success than just letting him attack them down the field and eating them up. Hey, going into NFL Championship weekend, after going 6-0 in the wild card round, I was feeling good. I crashed hard in the divisional round this past week. I went 0-4 in my picks. Feel pretty bad. But if I had to make my picks right now, based on what we now have, we have the Cincinnati Bengals going to Kansas City to face those Chiefs. The Bengals have been such a fun story. But honestly, I think the clock hits midnight here for Cinderella. The Chiefs, I would expect, are going to cruise in this game. I would pick the Chiefs by double digits. 10, 14, something like that. I think the Bengals will hang with them early, but I don't think they can hang with them for 60 minutes. And with the Kansas City Chiefs, as we saw this last weekend, you've got to play for 60 minutes or they will find a way to beat you. So I'll take the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl. And then in the NFC, we have the San Francisco 49ers going to LA to play the Rams. I think the Rams kind of slipped past Tom Brady, and that was a key test for them. I expect the Niners to put up a fight. I think this game will be closer. I think the Rams' defensive front, though, is going to harass Jimmy Garoppolo into some mistakes. Therefore, as of right now, I would be picking the Chiefs versus the Rams. And keep in mind, the Los Angeles Rams could become the first team in NFL history to make the Super Bowl in their hometown. That game will be played in that LA area. I mean, if LA actually allows the Super Bowl to take place, who knows? We'll kind of have to wait and we'll have to see, could the Super Bowl be looted We know what's going on in California right now. Okay, coming back, we still need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, the NFL playoffs are now down to that final four. We do have a chance that a team could win their first Super Bowl ever. There's still one team out there in the final four that hasn't yet won a Super Bowl. But here's a question I want you to think about. Which teams have suffered the most in the NFL playoffs? You might be surprised when you find out. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. The NFL playoffs have been exactly like we thought they would. They've been wild. They've been unpredictable. There have been a ton of surprises. There have been wild, crazy outcomes that we never thought would happen. We have now had both of the top seeds get knocked out on both sides of the NFL. AFC, the Tennessee Titans, gone. NFC, the Green Bay Packers, gone. Ryan Tannehill is out. Aaron Rodgers is out. Okay, well, that might not be that surprising, but Tom Brady is out. And while the NFL is without a doubt the best league in the world for that unpredictability, we are still probably going to end up with a team winning the Super Bowl that has won it before. I mean, currently, out of the four remaining teams, three of those teams have already won the Super Bowl. So as unpredictable as it can be, sometimes there is still a level of predictability there. Remember, there are still four teams in the NFL that have never even been to a Super Bowl. There are 12 teams that have never won a Super Bowl. But here's the question that I have for you today on our Daily Dose Top 5. Which teams, and along those same lines, which fan bases have truly suffered the most? Because I know when we think of these things, we think immediately, well, this team has never even been there. They have to have suffered the most. That's been brutal. Well, not necessarily. Because I'm a big believer that losing is not where pain truly comes from. I'm a big believer that almost winning is actually what hurts way, way more. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the top five NFL teams that have played the most playoff games, but have never won a Super Bowl. It's one thing if you never get to the postseason. That doesn't hurt. Not playing isn't being hurt. Almost winning is what hurts. When you get to the postseason and you're so close and you're just a game or two away and then it gets pulled away from you, oh, that hurts way, way more than never even getting there. We start off at number five. And we have a team that is just absolutely snake bit. I mean, injuries, cheap ownership, flaky fans, those things have all contributed to a franchise that can just never win the big one, even when it seems like they might be the best team in the league. I want you to think back to 1979. This team was stocked with talent. You had Dan Fouts. You had Charlie Joyner. You had John Jefferson. You had Kellen Winslow. And the San Diego Chargers went 12-4, but then they got to the playoffs and they got beat by the Houston Oilers, a good team, but not a great team, but a scrappy team. And Houston knocked them out. Then 2 years later, in 1981, the Chargers had added to that same group Chuck Muncy and James Brooks and Wes Chandler. But then they had to go to Cincinnati. They had to play the Bengals in the AFC Championship. And on that particular day, it was a little chilly in Cincinnati. How chilly? Well, the wind chill was 32 degrees below zero. The Bengals beat the Chargers and sent them home. Now, to be fair, maybe it wasn't the weather, because the Bengals had already beaten the Chargers earlier that year. Maybe they just didn't match up that well. Whatever it was, the Chargers didn't get it done. In 1994, the Chargers were again pretty good. They actually made it all the way to the Super Bowl. They had Stan Humphries. They had Natron Means. But then when they got there, they ran into one of the most efficient teams ever. They hit a buzzsaw with the San Francisco 49ers, who had Steve Young and Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders. The Chargers got blown out in the Super Bowl 49-26. And honestly, it didn't feel that close. The Chargers went 14-2 in 2006, but then in the playoffs, they lost to the New England Patriots. They went 13-3 in 2009, and then in the playoffs, they lost to the New York Jets. In all, the San Diego / Los Angeles Chargers have played in 30 playoff games. They have never won a Super Bowl, and that lands them today at number 5. We move next to number 4. And we get to a team that you might not think of as having been to the playoffs all that often. I mean, they went last year, but that was the first time they had been to the postseason since 2002. But I mean, prior to that, this franchise, like in the late 60s and early 70s, they were going to the postseason every year. In the 1980s, they went 7 different times. Unfortunately, the Cleveland Browns found new and inventive ways to lose every single time they got there. In 1980, they're down 14-12 to the Oakland Raiders at home. They are in field goal range. But the Cleveland Browns called the infamous play Red Right 88. And Browns quarterback Brian Sipe forced a pass to tight end Ozzie Newsome. Instead of just settling for the field goal, he threw an interception. And the Browns lost. In 1987, you had Bernie Kosar giving the Browns a big lead at home. But then Denver Broncos quarterback John Elway engineered the drive. The following year, Browns running back Ernest Biner had the game of his life. But then he also had the fumble. The Cleveland Browns have played 33 playoff games. They have never won the Super Bowl. And for that, they come in today at number 4. We arrive at number 3, and we reach a franchise that is just so hard luck that, I mean, we've heard them mentioned like in songs. There are like songs about this team and the way that they lose. They are literally a team that everyone kind of thinks of as being just hard luck. It's tough to be a fan of this team. I mean, it's hard not to feel bad for this team and their fans when they have this history of somehow always coming up short. From 1988 until the year 2000, this team went to the playoffs 10 times. They went to the Super Bowl 4 times in a row. But even though they had Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed and Bruce Smith and Cornelius Bennett, the Buffalo Bills came up short every single time. Sometimes they missed a field goal in the Super Bowl wide right. Sometimes they lost their helmet before the Super Bowl even started. Sometimes they let Patrick Mahomes go the length of the field in just 13 seconds. Sometimes their running back cut people's heads off.
Oh, no, you didn't.
What I'm saying is the Buffalo Bills have now played in 36 playoff games, but they have yet to win a Super Bowl. And that ranks them at number 3 on our list today. We are now at the number 2 NFL franchise to play in the most playoff games, but never actually win a Super Bowl. And I'll be honest, this number 2 selection kind of surprised me. But then once I started thinking about it, this team has had some serious heartbreak. Since the NFL merger, this franchise has been to the playoffs 19 different times. That's pretty good. They've been to the conference championship game 5 different times. But they've been to the Super Bowl just one single time. And in that game, the Tennessee Titans came up short in the ultimate way.
Rams 23, Titans 16. McNair will work out of the shotgun.
McNair drops, throws right side for Dyson. He dives for the end zone!
Didn't make it.
He came up 1 yard short.
But remember, before they were the Titans, back when they were the Houston Oilers, they went to back-to-back AFC championships. Remember, they had Dan Pastorini, and they had Earl Campbell, and they had Mike Barber, and they had Mike Renfro. Clear up until they had moved to Tennessee, and they had Steve McNair and Eddie George. But then, like we heard, Kevin Dyson came up short. Now they have Ryan Tannehill. They have Derrick Henry, but they're still coming up short. They didn't get it done this year. The Houston Oilers / Tennessee Titans have now played in 40 postseason games, but they have yet to win a Super Bowl. And for that, they are once again number two. We reach the number one team on our list of NFL franchises that has played in the most playoff games, but have never won a Super Bowl. And this was another one that surprised me a little bit. But then when you stop and think about it, it makes perfect sense. Because again, this isn't a franchise that just dominated one single decade. They've done it for years. They went to Super Bowl IV. They went to Super Bowl VIII. They went to Super Bowl IX. They went to Super Bowl XI. But of course, Fran Tarkenton and Chuck Former and Carl Eller and Alan Page and Sammy White, they were not quite good enough to win a Super Bowl for the Minnesota Vikings. But it wasn't just those 60s and 70s teams. Remember, Minnesota went to the NFC Championship game in 1987 with Wade Wilson and Anthony Carter. But then they lost to Washington. They went to the championship game in 1998 with Randall Cunningham and Robert Smith and Randy Moss and Chris Carter. But then they got out-muscled by those Dirty Bird Atlanta Falcons. They made it to the NFC title game in 2000 with Dante Culpepper, where they got blown out by the New York Giants. They made it again in 2009 with Brett Favre, but then there was that whole bounty game against the New Orleans Saints. And then back in 2017, Case Keenum somehow led the Minnesota Vikings to the NFC Championship game, but they got blown out by the Philadelphia Eagles. The Minnesota Vikings have played in 51 playoff games, but they have yet to win a Super Bowl. Now, this coming weekend, we have the Final Four. We have the championship games that will be taking place on Sunday, and only those Cincinnati Bengals have yet to win a Super Bowl. And while honestly, I don't like their odds this week, I told you, I think they're going to struggle a little bit against Kansas City. As we have already seen this year in the NFL, anything can happen. So I guess we just got to kind of cross our fingers and hope maybe we get a little new blood into the Super Bowl. It has been a wild, wild season. It will be interesting to see how this next weekend goes as well. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are going to be following those NFL playoff games very, very closely, and we will know who is going to Super Bowl 56. So, you know, we'll have to start to preview that game a little bit, but there are a number of other things to check in on. The NBA is rolling. College hoops is rolling. There's always something to keep up on in sports, so be sure that you stop by and check out The Dose, and be sure to let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you so much to Evoca CFO Dana McLeod for stopping by and letting us know that we can now go get that service that gives us back our local sports packages. Be sure that you go over to Evoca TV and sign up and get your altitude back. I'm sick of dealing with the cable companies. I want to watch the Nuggets. I want to watch the Avalanche. I want my teams back. Make sure you go over to Evoca TV and get your games back. But I also want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to our YouTube channel. Thank you for checking out all the new things going on over at DailyDoseSports.com. But more than anything else, thank you all for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Oh, no, you didn't.